tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. I got a letter from a lady who said, recently I heard you mention an article called The Proof of God, and only the week before, my daughter had asked me for proof, since her teacher had asked them for such proof in school. I was dumbfounded, as we are a very religious family, but I couldn't come up with anything, as the shock was so great. So she wrote, first I got mad, then cried, and naturally I started to worry where I had gone wrong. With the God is dead attitude going around, I fear that my daughter will become an agnostic. So she asked, would you please be kind enough to send me your pamphlet, The Proof of God? If we ever do need God, she said, it is now. Are you pretty much like this woman, the layman, sitting aside watching the struggle of the giants? They all are very anxious to tell you, you cannot demonstrate God in a scientific laboratory. What they don't seem to point out is that you can't explain what you do demonstrate in a scientific laboratory without God. That there is no scientific explanation for science. There is no scientific explanation for life itself, for all the creatures and the balance in what we call nature that is on this earth. Of the interdependency of these myriad species that make up this environment of ours. Well, everyone seems to have his vague notion about God or about Christ, and there is certainly endless controversy about it today. It just goes to show you that we're not always entirely consistent as human beings, are we? Now, the Bible is. Why is it that theologians are so easily backed into a corner when someone says, why doesn't God show himself? And this is the question that is asked by so many atheists and by so many questioners who are on the staffs of the weekly news magazines. Well, do you mean to say that God has a body, that God has a precise personality, that he dwells in a specific place? And if there is such a God who is a personal being, why doesn't he come down to this earth and demonstrate himself to us? Why doesn't he present himself to us and perhaps meet the press on television? Why doesn't he let us quote him in newspaper columns? And then, usually always, the theologians are willing to back down and say, well, you see, God is not a personality. God is everywhere at the same time. God is sort of nothing, and yet he's something. He's everywhere and nowhere. He's everything that is good as opposed to bad. And there are a lot of arguments about that right quick, and so the average theologian backs into the corner and says, yes, but my God cannot be proved or demonstrated by science. Well, I believe in God. And I believe in the God who inspired the Bible. And I believe in doing what that God said when he says, prove me now herewith. And when he says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. I've heard it said by leading theologians that the Bible makes no attempt to prove anything about God. It makes no attempt to prove that God exists. And yet the Bible itself is a history of God having presented himself to mankind, and mankind asking God to please get out of sight. Mankind running away from God. Now, God appeared to Adam after he was created. I know that sounds out of vogue and a little vague to most people today, but you can prove that, and if you'll just hold it a minute, I'll get to it a little later, because today we're dazzled by science, forgetting science is only the application of principles that are as ancient as the rocks under your feet. And the laws that made those rocks are the same laws that make scientists conform to certain regulations in the laboratory today, as modern as we are. Now, when God first appeared to Adam, after Adam's sin, what happened? Did God hide himself? No, he said, Adam, where are you? And Adam was over there hiding behind a bush, and he said, I was afraid. I heard your voice, and I hid myself. The history of the Bible is man trying desperately to hide himself from God, not the other way around. Now, God appeared, according to the Bible, and for the moment, if we're just talking about the Bible, not the endless arguments of theologians, the Bible is consistent. And the Bible says that God talked to many men. Enoch walked and talked with God. He talked to Noah. He got down in the dirt of the earth and wrestled with a man called Jacob and changed his name to Israel as a direct result of it. He revealed himself, his personality, his character, his ability and his power, his love and his kindness to humankind down through the centuries. But man always rejected his rule. Now, later on, at the time, he established his own race and nation of people on this earth for a specific great purpose, which purpose they never fulfilled. He ruled through human instruments, first Moses and Aaron, and then the priesthood, and then finally a system of judges who were his direct emissaries his direct representatives. But always the people wanted to be just like other people, just like your kids and mine, if you're not careful. They see some other little kid across the way, and they want to be like he is. They don't want to be like their parents. And that's an innate part of the characteristic of human nature. We want to be like other people. We want to be in vogue with the way things are around us in our age level, in our own group, in society. And so men wanted to be like other men. They looked over here and saw all the Gentiles and looked to them like they were having a riotous time. They didn't understand very much about the aftermath, about the headaches and hangovers. But they said, look at all these people over there having all these licentious, abominable, idolatrous types of worship involving prostitution, involving the sacrifice even of human beings, involving these giant pagan orgies. And isn't it interesting how even in movie titles they always take the word pagan and put the word splendor with it? It's never pagan filth, pagan degeneracy, or pagan in incredulity. It's always, you want to come to see this technicolor extravaganza with all this pagan splendor. Well, that's what the ancient Israelites thought. They thought the Hivites and Amorites and the Jebusites and Perizzites and all the other ites around there looked pretty splendorous. There's a song called Love is a Many Splendored Thing, and how two lovers met on a high hill and kissed in the morning mist, and it's better they did it then than any other time of the day you could think of. But you could rename that thing. Lust is a many splendored thing. And that is the way people look at it. And so Israel wanted to see how she could corrupt herself as a nation. Not that she sat down and analyzed it, not that individual people then thought, I want to be bad. No, they had to figure out a way where it was good. So they reasoned out, isn't it better that we have a king and that we have a voice in government? And who does this Samuel think he is? He's not so much. Who makes him a king and a ruler and a judge over us? Why don't we have a king like anybody else? And Samuel, when he heard it, ripped his clothes and began to call out to God, according to the inspired account. And God said, well, Samuel, forget it. It's not you they're rejecting. It's me, directly. So you tell them what kind of a king I'm going to give them. I'm going to pick this man over here called Saul, who's so filled with vanity he can't stand himself. He thinks he's the most fantastic creature to ever walk the earth. He's head and shoulders above any other man in the kingdom. He's a military giant. Logistically, he's a little off, but otherwise, he is a military giant. And he is going to be your ruler. And so Samuel obediently went and poured oil over the head of Saul and made him king over the kingdom of Israel. So what happened? Immediate taxation, military conscription, fields were plowed up and made into trenches. Nice, pleasant little villages were made into forts. And so everybody went to war. So what did they have? Well, suffering, disease, economic hardship, and privation. Some of them had poverty. But the upshot of the whole thing was that after a period of certain years, Saul did enlarge the kingdom. But he kept on disobeying God until God finally rejected him and chose another man you've heard of, King David. Now, David, well, he went on to further enlarge the kingdom, was nevertheless a man after God's own heart. He sought God. He did not reject his rule, but rather wanted God's government, wanted God's way. And when he sinned, he repented bitterly and didn't try to solve his own problems of government. And the reason that government prospered was because there was a king over it who was seeking God's solutions, not his own. So here's the story of the Bible, of mankind hiding himself from God. And yet today, the average person who, let's face it, has not read the Bible, doesn't know much about the Bible, is pretty sure it's a religious book of the Hebrews with a lot of explanations to Hebrew kiddies about where things came from because they lack the science of the day to explain it otherwise. And so they think that it's merely a collection of history, of music, of literature, of poetry, and certain iconoclastic sort of tradition-breaking speeches on the part of a lot of fiery, wild-eyed prophets of the day who sought to take away all fun and pleasure from the society and came along with apocalyptic prophecies of doom. Oh, they think all kinds of things about the Bible, but very few people have taken the trouble to read it for themselves. Now, all down through history, God has revealed himself to mankind, and mankind has tried to run away and hide from God. Why does man try to hide himself from God? Well, because of something that God built into human nature called a conscience. Because we just cannot admit to ourselves that if we live the way that seems to appeal to the physical senses and human lust and desire, it's going to kick back on us and wreck our minds and bodies, our marriages, our very society. And we cannot seem to abide the idea that doing what we want to do, to whom and with whom and when we get good and ready to do it, ought to kick back and give us a headache and a hangover or maybe a strange disease. So we would like to have all of that get out of the way. We'd like to have the pleasures. And certain pleasures are not wrong, as a matter of fact, far heightened when you know you're doing them legally. But we want to have all the illicit pleasures, the illicit sensory experiences, and not have any penalties to suffer. So we want that conscience to keep quiet. And the best way to kick that conscience out of the way and into submission to us is to deny there is a God, that there is any higher power, because the average person looks around and he just doesn't know anybody who knows much more than he does. He'll be willing to admit that maybe somebody in one particular direction is a little smarter than he is. Maybe a scientist who knows something about electronics is a little more intelligent in that specific direction. But when it comes to the real big problems as to help Mr. Wilson or Mr. Johnson run government, that second martini solution to the problems in Vietnam, he'll figure he knows a whole lot more than the average scientist. The average person has vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. That's part of his human nature. And he feels he has the solutions. And his vanity will not let him bow down of and by himself to a great power, a great force, a great ruling force in his life to whom he owes absolute obedience and allegiance. He wants to be his own man. How many times have you heard people say, I'm not taking orders from anybody. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, says the 17-year-old teenager. And he doesn't seem to realize he's going to be told what to do all the rest of his life, if not by other human beings, then by his own passions and by maybe a person that few people realize exists called Satan the devil. Now, Jesus Christ of Nazareth did walk this earth. And he came also to reveal the Father, not to hide him, but to reveal him. And it said in the book of Hebrews, if we were talking about the Bible and all these arguments instead of what people think, that he was the exact stamped impress, and the Hebrew word used in the first chapter of Hebrews is character, K-A-R-A-K-T-E-R, or the Greek word, I should say, in the book of Hebrews written by the Apostle Paul. We don't even spell it that way, but it has the same connotation today. It meant the very precise personality, the outlook, the point of view, the approach to things, the exact nature, the exact ability, the exact power. Jesus said he didn't speak a thing of himself. That the works that he did, the Father, which dwelt in him, did. He didn't perform them. Christ did not perform them himself. Jesus came to reveal the Father, the exact similitude, the exact likeness, and the same personality of the Father. But today, people are airing hidden doubts and saying, who was Jesus? And so today, people are still hashing it about and wondering, what was he? Who was he? And then we quote a lot of German theologians, or we quote an American theologian, and we always refer to somebody who has long since been dead, and figure, well, his ideas are probably as good as anybody else's. Let's see what he said. So people are wondering, well, who was Jesus? Well, Jesus was Jesus. Well, yes, but who was he? You'll say, well, who is that man? You'll give him his name. He's Joe Doak. Yeah, but who is he? What you mean is, what does he do? What does he stand for? What was his background and his education? What is his present job? And so people today say, yes, but didn't Jesus call himself the Son of Man instead of the Son of God? Well, yes, Jesus did refer to himself as the Son of Man, but he meant by that the very Son of Mankind, the servant of man, the forerunner and the predecessor of mankind's salvation. He meant the first begotten from man into the God family. And the firstborn from the man family, or mankind, into the kingdom of God. And since he was the first fruits of the dead and came with a divine commission to reveal the Father to all mankind, he referred to himself, not all the time, but once in a while, as the Son of Man. But he constantly talked about his Father, who was in heaven, and revealed the Father to human beings. Now, the main point I'm making is the Bible is absolutely consistent about God, about what God looks like, about whether he is an absolute personality, about whether he dwells in a specific place, whether he has arms, legs, a head, eyes, whether he has ability, nature, sensitivity, whether he has divine forgiveness, whether he has love and long-suffering, or whether he is a hanging judge. Whether he's the divinized father figure or whether he is the great creator God who is anxious to forgive your sins as quickly as you will really repent of them and get rid of them because you call on him for the help you need. Oh, God exists, all right, and you can absolutely prove it, but only if you're willing to do it scientifically. You can sit around all day long and throw somebody a sop because you're a little afraid of the answers and say, well, now we can't demonstrate that God is existing because we don't want to use any science in this. We can't do it scientifically, I want to hasten to assure you. We can't take any scientific experiment and prove that God exists by this. Why do they say that? When the Bible itself claims you're to do exactly that. What is science but just knowledge unlocking the key to the powers and the laws and the forces, the energies that work upon the physical, material environment that is all around us? Science is logical. Science is natural. It's not illogical. It's not spiritual or supernatural. And anything that science discovers today is only unlocking a property about the existing material earth that has been here from the time it was originally created. Every day, some scientist is discovering something that God revealed centuries ago. Now, God says in the first chapter of the book of Romans, through the pen of the Apostle Paul, that the ancient philosophers, whose works are still studied with bated breath today, were absolute idiots, a collection of fools. They might have had plaster boards on their head and degrees after their names, but they were gibbering idiots because they were given over to all kinds of fornication, covetousness, transvestitism, and perhaps masochism, and a little bit of homosexuality mixed in with it. Oh, you can read the first chapter of Romans. I know people like to read a lot of real shady stories today. You want to read about human beings in the raw? You want to read about what God calls vile affections and about men leaving the natural use of the woman, burning in their lust one toward another? That's in the very Word of God in the first chapter of the book of Romans. And almost always, when God is talking about that type of person long since dead, the philosophers who wanted God to get out of the way because their conscience bothered them, he will say that the real reason they did is because they wanted to follow the hidden secret sins that really had control over their lives. They were slaves to their own lust, and they simply wanted God to get out of the way and their conscience to quit bothering them. Now, God says the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who, as the original had it, hold back the truth, who suppress the truth, as it should be, from the original Greek, in unrighteousness. Because, verse 19 of Romans 1, that which may be known of God is evident to them, as the margin has it, for God has shown it unto them. Now, in what way has God shown unto philosophers, scientists, government leaders, or anyone who is anybody, his own power? He goes on to explain, for the invisible things of him. People argue today, yes, but God is invisible. Why doesn't he come down and show himself? Just hang on. He's going to do it. He is going to do precisely that. He's done it in the past, and he is right now waiting for the time when he's going to do it again. And we can laugh and have all the jokes and the fun over all of those statements that we wish. We have just a few more years to enjoy them. And then God is going to prove to us that he does exist. He said, for the invisible things of him from the creation, not as a matter of time, not from the time of the creation, but by looking at the creation, by that which is created, the invisible things about God from the creation, the physical, material universe and earth are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, not the things that just happen. Now I'm going to give you some proofs about design, of the interdependency of creatures in the universe, or I should say on the earth, and of the interdependency, for that matter, of the universe itself. He goes on to say that his eternal power and Godhead are revealed by the things that are made, and they are without excuse, because when they knew God, they didn't glorify him as God, but became vain and wise in their own conceits. You'd be absolutely amazed to see the fantastic number of creatures who have already outdone man with his modern technology. Take a look at some of the so-called lower animal forms and take some of the most modern, up-to-the-minute achievements of science. Building today is a very booming and growing industry, at least in the United States and some other countries. But the Mason Bee is a better builder than man and never makes the mistakes he does.
and he can really be depended upon. Now, we have fantastic big pulp mills and logging industries and paper plants, and we try to make different kinds of paper. As a matter of fact, the Plain Truth magazine, which is free of charge, 52 pages, full color, published on 3 continents and read by perhaps up to 4 million people around the world, has its own special brand of paper called Ambassador. They even named it after us because we had to have a little bit of a better paper to print that magazine on, and it's absolutely free of charge. We're just after quality because we believe in it. But paper wasps have been making paper long before any Egyptian ever figured out how to beat and roll a piece of papyrus together. Now, we really pride ourselves about these balloon trips and about men skydiving out of balloons or taking pictures from balloons, but weaving spiders have been doing that for years and taking long trips over lakes and starting new colonies around the world. Some of them have been found thousands of feet in the air far out at sea because they weave a little strand of web and then the wind comes along and carries the whole apparatus gaily across the sea to some far-off island. And water spiders have managed to figure out how to make a diving bell for years. Now, the point is, if all these things evolved, you know, the first few million years these water spiders tried to make these diving bells, they kept drowning because the bubble kept escaping. And the only way they could store their food and have protection from their enemies was to swim down underneath and then come back up underneath that bubble and sort of live there, chewing their food and being completely protected. But the trouble is, they never made it because just like that joke you might have heard about the fellow who wasn't able to walk on water, they didn't make it. Every time they tried to walk on water, they drowned. And every time they tried to make that bubble and take it underwater with them, it escaped and they drowned, and so they didn't survive. Now, that doesn't make sense, does it? And an elephant has better tire tread than some of the big companies you hear of, and an owl has better night vision than some of the infrared apparatuses put on modern military rifles. Talk about intelligence. You ever see a flea circus? You can train fleas to do a lot of things human beings can't seem to get through their heads. And talk about hearing. A mosquito has better hearing than a man, and lighting, a firefly is better off at that than most of us are. Blood detection over great distances, sharks are real good at that. Mosquitoes are terrific at local anesthesia, a sort of a chill shot and a decoagulant. They'll come along and give you a local anesthetic so you don't feel it when they stick their proboscis in a pore, and then they inject this decoagulant so your blood will run free, and then they go away all charged up with your blood. You know, the animals own all the track and field records there are. Gazelles, the broad jump, kangaroos, boxing, cheetah, the sprint. We can't outdo the animals when you stop to think about it. But all of these animals had to have that exact ability that they have today in order to survive. And one little point. If they were surviving in a different and far more inferior or far simpler state, then they were surviving, right? They had a full belly or full proboscis, as the case may be. And as long as they were happy and they were surviving in that form, what made them change? You don't suddenly discover food just because you get hungry, and neither did they. What about these creatures? One fish that has 2 sets of eyes, one pair for looking up at enemies and the other pair for searching the bottom as he feeds. How long did it take him to get that? Did he evolve that over billions of years and keep getting eaten alive because he couldn't see the enemy above? Well, then he didn't survive, did he? And it really is fantastic when you take God at his word in the first few verses here, the first chapter of Romans, and look to the things that are made and simply try to ask yourself, could this have just occurred by accident without a divine creator? Could it have occurred by natural laws, resident forces, over a period of interminable billions of years with no interference from an all-wise designer or a life-giver or a creator? You talk about faith. I think scientists have to take the cake on that, not theologians. I think they have a greater faith than many theologians. They believe in nothing with a firmness, a tenacity that defies description. You need to write for these booklets, Does God Exist?, and the proof of the Bible, and some articles on what does God look like. And if you write for that article, What Does God Look Like?, we'll know what you mean, and we'll send you an article on whether or not Christ had long hair. Another article entitled, Why Does God Hide Himself?, is free of charge, and the booklet on Why Were You Born? Explains why God allows human suffering, why he allows wars. Then you need to write for the booklet on the 10 Commandments. How they're applicable today, how the Bible is up to date, up to the minute, the 10 Commandments in this modern world, how every last one of those 10 Commandments are positive, not negative. For every negative statement, there is a positive side. It isn't a negative law of thou shalt not.
There is a great deal of positive suggestion and positive commandment in those laws. You need to find out what they are. Then write for the booklet on Why Were You Born? Does God Exist? The Proof of the Bible. And also, while you're at it, write for this article on Seven Proofs God Exists. Now, that will come along. I want to show you that because you cannot answer. I don't care whether you've had 6 or 8 or 10 years toward a doctorate in university on paleontology or something else. You cannot answer those seven major proofs God does exist. There just isn't any excuse once you've read those major proofs. There isn't any way around them at all. Seven proofs God exists. He really does, and you can prove it. And also write in for this booklet on The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like, because here's a booklet that shows you in step-by-step form the real solutions to the biggest problems confronting mankind today. The solutions to the problems of the economy, of burgeoning, exploding populations, the problems of growing racial hatred and intrigue, the problems of political divisions, and the problems of the stockpiling of hydrogen and atomic weapons. And here is a booklet that marches right on out into the future in step-by-step sequence and detail to show you what are the solutions to these problems, the good news beyond. The title of the booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. This booklet, more than any other piece of literature we could put in your hands, and it's all free, is going to tell you exactly what we believe, what we stand for, what we're trying to do, and here's the whole story of how it's going to come about. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Here are the two widely divergent views of politicians and government leaders and then scientists of what they secretly feel the world tomorrow is going to be like. Many of them feel it won't even be here. And then scientists talk about a wonderful, glittering, sort of a gigantic Disneyland of leisure, of more pleasure and ease and luxury for the few, but more starvation, more riots, more wars, more upsets for the many. But all the way through this booklet, you will see solutions. You will see the predictions about the outcome. You will see present-day trends and conditions in the big countries around this world analyzed and solved. You will see tomorrow's headlines today. You'll see the really big news that is not being reported anywhere else about the way this world is going to be. And included, one of the most fantastic newspapers you've ever read. Sort of a could-be newspaper, the way the world news could be today, and believe it or not, the way it will be in not very many more years. The best news you could read, an article about total disarmament. Articles about the solution to the big problems that everyone worries about today. Solving our economic problems, bringing people out of poverty, solving the racial hatreds and strife of people. Making wasteland productive. Solutions to the problems of weather, solving the problems of divorce, solving the problems of education and school dropouts, what have you. It's all here in this newspaper that is contained inside the booklet. Now, you don't have to ask for it separately. The booklet is entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And there's a complete picture of it given. The exact conditions that will become extant. How we'll finally be totally delivered from the many problems that constantly confront us today. This booklet, as no other does, shows you exactly the meaning and the purpose of this broadcast, The World Tomorrow. That's why it's by the same title, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's free of charge, no price, no one's going to call on you, and we'll send it to you immediately upon receiving your request if you'll write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station and write for the booklet immediately. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.